All right, can everybody hear me okay? Good. So, last presentation of the day, this is exciting. My name is Katrina Radiseo, and I'm a recent grad from McMaster University, and today I'm presenting this scoping review and model that we developed as part of our research project. It was a collaborative effort between the occupational therapy students, as well as the physiotherapy students, myself and one other, and collaboration between not only McMaster School of Rehabilitation Science, but also the Northern School of Medicine through Thunder Bay at the Lakehead campus. And so, before we get started, I just want to acknowledge that the territory and the land that we're on today is a traditional territory of the Mississaugas of the New Credit, Anishinaabe. And this territory is covered under Treaty 13. And so the agenda for today, we're going to go over some of the learning objectives. So what I want you to get from this presentation today, some quick background about the scoping review, and then get right into those facilitators and barriers, as well as the conceptual model that we developed based off of the scoping review, and then go into some conclusions and reflection. So the learning objectives, what I would like you to take from this presentation today is that ability to identify some facilitators and barriers that you see in your own practice or organizations that may impact Indigenous access to healthcare. Also, I'd like for you to try and understand the key role that you can play in facilitating this access and supporting Indigenous peoples on and off of reserves for accessing the care that they need. And so this will kind of tie into that conceptual model that I'll be presenting towards the end. And so just some quick background. There has been a lasting impact of colonialism on Indigenous peoples within Canada. And so this stems from three key issues. The first being jurisdictional issues. So there's different funding sources, provincial, federal, and that also changes depending on the reserve. So what services are funded by what organizations. There's also geographic isolation. So many Indigenous communities have been pushed onto reserves that are away from other communities, but then also away from those city centers that have majority of the resources. And then institutional racism. So this includes stigma, stereotypes, and kind of all of those prejudices that we carry with us on a daily basis, and it's a natural kind of process, but understanding that institutional racism has been part of colonialism and that history of colonialism. And so colonialism has impacted those social determinants of health that we know are so key to health outcomes for individuals. So on reserves, you see lower employment rates, household overcrowding, things like access to nutrition and nutritious foods and access to healthcare are all different on reserves because of this impact of colonialism. And so it's not hard to see that there is reduced healthcare access and poorer health outcomes for Indigenous peoples because of the impact all of these have on those individuals. And so that's where you come in. So our research question, we formulated it in a population concept context format, which is based off of the Joanna Briggs Institute guideline for scoping reviews. We felt it was an easier way to try and create this research question rather than a PICO question, because that was not going to work for kind of what our direction was and what our purpose was. So our searchable question is there at the bottom. And unfortunately, after our preliminary search, we had to broaden the scope to rehabilitation professionals as a whole, all across the world rather than just in Canada, because there really wasn't much for our profession specifically that answered the question of how. There are position statements about what and what position we hold as the body of physiotherapy, but really no guidelines on how to improve that access. So the final articles that were included within the scoping review, unfortunately there was no gray literature because of what I was saying previously, really didn't talk about how. So these were the eight articles that were included, two of which were handpicked. And you can see that a lot of those articles really don't have the highest level of evidence in that hierarchy. Again, pointing to that need to continue the research and really build that field. There, again, little information specific to rehabilitation professionals, and especially physiotherapists. A lot of the research came out of Canada, majority of it did, but also countries like Australia and the United States that also have large indigenous populations. And the authors were of indigenous as well as non-indigenous descent. And so going into those facilitators, we're gonna jump right in because there's a lot to get through. So there's three key themes that were identified, and we defined a key theme as being one that showed up in three or more of the articles during our thematic analysis. So reflection and action is one, collaboration and integration, and then physical location. And so reflection and action, this includes your reflection on your personal, professional prejudices towards Indigenous peoples. And recognizing that if they are there, what are they, and how may that impact your practice? Also recognizing that there is that intergenerational trauma or soul scarring is another term that you may hear. The research is also starting to push that idea of cultural safety. And if you're still in school or if you've done or had any education around Indigenous healthcare, cultural safety, it's a process. It's not a destination. It's a lifelong learning process. And so recognizing that each community is going to be different and your idea of cultural safety is going to change. And those tools that you use in order to kind of work towards cultural safety is, again, going to be different depending on the community and its needs. And then using a strength-based approach. So the strength-based approach, what it means is looking at those resources that are currently available and those programs that are available, and how can you utilize them in the best way possible, rather than creating new programs or realizing that this doesn't work. What is working and how can you capitalize on that? So collaboration and integration. A lot of the research shows that collaboration between healthcare providers, paraprofessionals. Paraprofessionals are individuals who are from that reserve, trained on the reserve, and currently work on the reserve to provide care such as addictions, mental health counseling, all of those services. And then community members. So that collaborative and partnership is so important when you are providing services on reserve, and also to Indigenous patients, even off reserve. Patient navigators. Navigator and navigation is starting to become a buzzword in healthcare. So really, the research was showing that having a patient navigator or somebody in that navigation role or taking on that role really helped to facilitate the access, but also improve the efficiency of the system as a whole, so people were getting the right care at the right time. And then also utilizing elders and community supports for programming. When elders and the community was involved in the development of the programming, just like we do in kind of every other situation, we try to engage our stakeholders. And so really trying to work with elders and community support to improve that uptake within communities. And then physical location. So location and visibility within a community was shown to improve access of those services within a community. So for example, on a lot of reserves, physiotherapists go into the home. And so there really isn't that visibility of that person providing that physiotherapy service on the reserve so that people know who they're working with or who they could be working with, or even what a physiotherapist does. So really having that visibility within the community is so important. And it could be something as simple as watching a broomball game after work or something while you are in the community so that you have that face time. It also helps to improve that therapeutic relationship and then again, that understanding of your role. Also, co-location of services, so having traditional and Western services within one community or within one roof was also helpful. And so going into some of the barriers, legacy of colonialism, inter-jurisdictional challenges, as well as professional silos. I'm going to go through these a little quicker because we've already talked about two. So one new point with the legacy of colonialism is that normalized inequity of health services between those that Indigenous individuals receive and those that non-Indigenous do. And so we've kind of normalized this. So it's just, with normalization, we're not going to make a difference. So we need to recognize that it has been normalized and that we need to act on it. With interjurisdictional challenges, again, that fragmentation of services, sometimes issues get passed around like a hot potato because there isn't that accountability. And then professional silos, so that lack of understanding of what a paraprofessional does. And using a multidisciplinary approach is actually better than using that interdisciplinary approach. So having a common goal that you're all working towards with a different path versus interdisciplinary where you each have your own. So the conceptual model, we chose a tree because a tree can change and develop and all of that with over time. And it can withstand the test of time. So the soil, we've kind of thought would symbolize beliefs, traditions, and values. And so these are what nourish the tree and give it its strength. And will in turn nourish the roots, which are the community, its members, or different parts of the community. And so the rocks we saw as being that intergenerational trauma, that legacy of colonialism. We can't change it, it is there. And so learning that it is there, but there are ways to grow around it as the communities and the members and us, through that process of reconciliation, work towards a better future. The trunk, again, that buzzword navigation, it helps to connect those individuals in the communities and the individual communities themselves with the services that are available to them. And so anybody can have that role, whether it's an individual or a whole group of individuals working on that advocacy piece. So again, to ensure that the right person is getting the right care at the right time. And then the branches are depict the organizations that provide the services. And so right now with those interjurisdictional challenges, they're pretty separate. And so the hope is that over time, those can start to intertwine as organizations become better with that collaboration piece and also that communication piece. And the leaves. So I can talk more about the leaves later, but providers help to enrich those communities as the leaves are falling and you go in and out of communities. You're still going to have a lasting impact. So it's important that that is a positive one. And then the wind. So the wind can change the way the tree interacts and different parts of the tree interact with one another. And this could be council or programming on the reserves to improve that connection that providers and organizations have with one another. And so in conclusion, there are several facilitators and barriers to healthcare access. The model can be applied because it is conceptual to a variety of contexts and situations. And healthcare providers must consider where they are in the model in order to strengthen their connection with it. And this model is going to grow and change over time, just like our healthcare system is. So what I would like you to do is reflect on what you've learned in this very quick presentation, what facilitators and barriers are present in your organization and practice, and challenge yourself even further to think of some solutions that you could make or come upon in order to change some of those barriers and really work on those facilitators. And then how can you apply this model in your practice? So we can only act on what we know, and I hope you know a little bit more than when I first started talking.
We have time for one question. Does anybody have a question? Perhaps you're busy reflecting.
Or discussion, I'm open to that too.
Any comment?
Yeah, sure. So the leaves themselves, the colors are actually symbolic as well. So with any conceptual model, you really want to make sure everything has a purpose. So the colors of the leaves, they actually change just like the seasons do. And as our time in communities ebbs and flows, some people spend months, some people spend years. So it's really working on kind of that transition through communities and through organizations and services. And then the leaves falling to the ground, they're going to, in nature, they do biodegrade and then provide nourishment into the soil and all of those components, which are then uptaken by the tree. So that's that feedback component that you have. All right.
So thank you very much, Katrina. Thank you all for attending this session. Please remember to complete your sessional evaluation that's on Event Mobi, because you're going to win a prize, maybe. You have a chance. And just to remind you that Dr. Dave Walton will be talking making his presentation, PhysioMoose Canada, in the large salon down the hall in 15 minutes. So thanks, everybody.